Let's play some cards.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
From Harrah's Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and professional broadcaster Paul Harris.
You're good, kid, but as long as I'm around, you're second best. You might as well learn to live with it.
You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them.
Now, from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking with Maury Eskandani. Maury is the guy who produced last year's ESPN coverage of the World Series of Poker, including that groundbreaking near-live coverage of the main event last July and then again in November with the November 9, which this year will be the October 8. But we also want to talk to Maury about the return to TV of Poker After Dark, which, albeit is on in reruns, but made its debut last night on the NBC Sports Network and will be on there six nights a week in late night. We also want to ask him, is high stakes poker coming back? What about the NBC Heads Up, which Dennis has a particular affinity for because a couple of years ago he finished in third place. So you want to be on the top of Maury's call sheet if that does come back, right?
Oh, I definitely do. They have a kind of a simplified way of doing it. He just gets all his group together and they vote on who they think are the top pros that would be the most appealing, and whoever appears on the most lists basically gets invited. So it's a pretty simple process. I've been lucky enough to be there twice. I would love to come back again to it. I've done fairly well in it, I think. I'm 1-1 against Doyle, but, you know. I got it in with the best hand both years.
Yes, you did.
So,
well, we have a lot of stuff to talk about this week, and I guess the biggest poker news of the last week had to do with Epic Poker filing for Chapter 11. So I guess we should start there. Chapter 11 is not liquidation of a company. It's when you declare bankruptcy, but it's for the purpose of restructuring. If they were going to liquidate the company, that would be Chapter 7. But Epic Poker League's parent company, Federated Sports and Gaming, has filed to go Chapter 11. They've got over 100 people and companies listed as creditors for this, and it means that Epic Main Event number 4 and the $1 million free roll that was promised for the end of the season have both got to be in jeopardy. Although Commissioner Annie Duke says the intention is to complete season 1, and Executive Director Jeffrey Pollack says the goal is to keep the Epic Poker League moving forward. This is something that we're not happy about, Dennis, but you and I from day one were saying, where's the money to pay for the overlay, for the free roll, for the free rooms and food for the players, and not taking any rake out of these tournaments?
Absolutely. Everybody wanted it to succeed. The idea, the concept, having a kind of an upper tier, a PGA, if you will, for poker players was a great idea. But from the get-go, it looked a little bit flawed. I was hoping I was wrong. I definitely wasn't on the inside and didn't know. But I think, and God, I can't believe I'm doing this with Annie. Annie's a friend of mine. Don't get that wrong. But maybe they were a little naive in thinking that these top 200 or 230, whatever it was, poker players were just flocked to it, and they'd have a huge percentage of them playing, and everybody would want to be down there and watch it, and all the satellites would be huge, and, you know, I think that was their vision, and that they would be able to pull up sponsorships and a whole bit that way. Obviously, none of that materialized. I think, and I don't know for sure, but I think they declared debt of about $7 million in this thing. You know, they were not able to get sponsorships for the TV. They ended up having to buy time on CBS. They barely made minimum on some of their satellites and getting people into it. It just didn't fly the way the people wanted to at all. I guarantee it wasn't for lack of trying between Jeffrey Pollack and Annie Duke. They both were doing everything they could, I'm sure, with it. But it may have been a flawed concept from the beginning, in thinking that in this economy, with poker still not fully accepted or legal in the U.S., with no online to drive people to anything that way, that this thing, you know, could support that kind of an overlay.
Well, so, you and I have a one disagreement about this, which is that you say it's a great idea to have a league of professional poker players. I disagree. I think that poker's reputation is making a Dennis Phillips, making a Darvin Moon, making a Chris Moneymaker, guys who come out of nowhere and capture the public's imagination, and you have that anyone can do it concept. You know, if in every other game where there are millions of dollars on the line in professional sports or anything else, you really don't have a chance. You're not going to get on the tennis court and beat Rafael Nadal. You're not going to get on the baseball field and strike out Albert Pujols. You're not going to get on the court with Kobe Bryant and be able to jam over his head more than once. You're not going to be able to get out there in the NFL and win the Super Bowl. But anybody can win the main event of the World Series of Poker. Anybody can win a circuit event like the one coming next month here to Harrah's St. Louis. Anybody can win the Heartland Poker Tour or any cash game or anywhere else. It is one of the things that is unique about poker and I think helps grow the game. If you're only seeing the elite of the game playing the game against the other elites of the game, where's the chance for the recreational player to dream someday that will be me? You're not going to beat Tiger Woods. You can beat Phil Ivey.
But I, although I agree with you and you bring up some valid points there, I think there is room within the poker world for both. You still want to have that Darvin Moon, that chance to go to make a final table, to make millions, to make a life-changing final table. No argument with that. But still yet, it is enjoyable because we do watch Poker After Dark. We do watch high-stakes poker that are literally every seat is put as somebody on there that you recognize, and they play good poker, and it's enjoyable to watch it. Now, if you get a final table of six people that you don't know or a final table of six people that you've seen before, which one is probably going to be the most entertaining to watch? Mm-hmm. I think there's a place for both. I absolutely agree with you, and I don't want to give up that chance for anybody to be able to win the millions, to be able to make it to the final table of the main event. I think it's a huge challenge. Everybody's got that chance. You know, everybody can hit a hole in one. Everybody can bowl a 300 game. But, you know, I'm not going to go out there on a course and play 18 holes with Tiger and beat him.
Right.
Ain't going to happen.
Right.
You know, one hole, I might get extremely, extremely lucky and tie him. And that would be about, you know, that would be my ultimate goal. But I can sit down at a poker table with anybody and feel that I have a decent chance of winning.
Yep.
So it's hugely different there. But I still think good entertainment, when you get somebody like a Daniel and a Phil and whatever on the table and they're talking and comparing and seeing how they play that game, it's still good poker. And if you have a tournament where you're fairly sure that several members of that final table are going to be recognizable people, it's not all a bad thing.
I agree with that, and we do need some of them, and that's what I was saying last year when Epic's parent company, Federated Sports and Gaming, bought the Heartland Poker Tour. We were saying, you know, HPT, if they get six people who you never heard of, who's going to watch that? You need some stars there. But we do have those two, or we did have those TV shows that were just stars. I like the idea of big tournaments with big buy-ins being open to as many people as possible. You'll end up with some stars. You'll also see new stars. Will Fiella, who we had on last week, who people just saw on the World Poker Tour. Dwight Pilgrim. These guys who, you know, kind of came out of nowhere in the last few years. Matt Affleck. Jonathan Duhamel. These are people who would not be in there without that first couple of wins to qualify for the Epic Poker League. I like to see those kind of stories. But we only have a slight disagreement, I guess, there. But but talking about the Heartland Poker Tour, we found out that they had filed suit against FS&G because they didn't get their money, right?
Absolutely. On October 24th, as it turns out, I think it was in North Dakota or South Dakota, they filed suit against them for failure to complete the acquisition agreement. And not for sure what that means. I'm not on the inside there. But whatever their agreement was to purchase Heartland, they did not follow through. I'm sure there were timelines and payments to be made and certain obligations that had to be met, and they were just unable to meet them because they didn't get the turnout for Epic and it didn't turn out the way they wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I don't know that Epic owns Heartland. If the acquisition was never completed, yeah, I'm not an attorney, but I kind of wonder now then if Heartland is going to be able just to go back on its own and separate itself from Epic and all of the problems that they're having.
Yeah, well, I hope that I hope that it doesn't get dragged down to the muck by this. I mean, they're currently in the midst of the 100th Heartland Poker Tour event, which is going on just fine, and they go on from place to place, and you know, it's much smaller than the circuit event or the WPT, but they certainly are an ongoing success that Todd Anderson and his partners have put together over the course of the last decade, and I would hate to see anything pulled out from under them. Now, I do have a question for you. As a pro who had not qualified for an Epic League card, I'm curious for your take on this. Because I've read online complaints by some of the pros who did play in this that they now feel like they have been ripped off by Epic not having the money, the financial backing, to really do what they said they would do, which is put on four events plus $1 million free roll for the top, I think it was supposed to be 27 qualifiers. They're complaining that $400,000 overlay in event number four plus the $1 million free roll, that money should still be out there for poker players to play for because they were promised that. Now, when I think about this, I think, well, you were invited with the opportunity to pay $20,000 to play in these events. You knew you'd be playing against other great players. But, yeah, you did have this other money hanging over there. But what kind of guarantee was there in your mind that you would eventually have that other stuff to play for? And is it a ripoff, I guess, is the bottom line?
Well, when you're a poker player or a professional one, actually in any aspect of life, you try to make the best decisions you can monetarily. And having a $2.2 million total overlay in this series was huge. They were doing that to attract these pros, to make it so worthwhile for them to play that, you know, they would fork over the $80,000 for the entry fees, and they were hoping for a huge turnout. Yes, if you came in and you put down $20,000 for event one and event two and event three and did not make any money back, then, you know, in your own mind, you know, yeah, it does seem like a little bit of a ripoff. What if you're one of the people that right now is at the top of the league?
Yeah.
And is in need of money and is looking for this $1 million final event, hopefully, to do something because you're free rolling into it and all of a sudden it's canceled. Yeah, you could be a little upset with that. There's no doubt about it. I am a little disappointed that the finances weren't out there to guarantee at least the completion of the first year. Now, then there might be situations we don't know about. Perhaps they didn't budget in having to buy the time from CBS. Perhaps they budgeted in higher buy-in figures. Perhaps a lot of different things for it. But for whatever reason, if they have not got the funds to even complete the first year, that's a huge black mark, I think. So hopefully they can get it together and get it in four and get this final free roll. But I think they're fishing for another sponsor, somebody to step in to take over the company, and that's going to be a hard sell
for
a company that's that much in debt.
You know, Jeffrey and Annie were both on with us last year to announce the launch of Epic. We had them on different shows. So two times we had them on, and we asked both of them, who's the sponsor? Where are you going to get funding from? Particularly Jeffrey, who has a history as once being the commissioner of the World Series of Poker and had trouble getting sponsors for the biggest poker event in the world. We asked him, how are you going to get them for the Epic Poker League? And he said, don't worry, there are people out there. We're talking to plenty of people. To this day, almost a year later, Dennis, as far as I know, there are no sponsors for the Epic Poker League. There's nobody who's underwriting the cost of those shows on CBS and Velocity, which drew very small viewership. It's hard to draw viewership for a show that's only on every once in a while. The WSOP is on every week for months on ESPN. The World Poker Tour is on every Sunday night on FSN. When Poker After Dark and High Stakes Poker were on, they were on at regular times all the time. The Epic Poker League was, oh, is that on? I just happened to come across it one day and said, oh, I didn't know this was on. You cannot build success that way. And if you do not have the sponsors, if they never materialized, that's the answer to how you go broke.
Pretty simple basics. If you don't have as much money coming in as you have going out, you're in trouble.
Yep.
So, and again, this doesn't benefit anybody, their failure. Yeah, it's not good for poker. It's not good for them. It's not good for the concept. I wish and would love it if they come up with some way or some sponsor or something to get the Epic one back online. But I just can't see it happening, to be honest about it.
Here's my favorite comment about the whole thing from Doyle Brunson, who, you know, he has been involved in some controversial comments over the last couple of weeks on his blog about Full Tilt Poker, which we've gotten into on previous shows. But about this, Doyle tweeted, "Looks like I outlasted another lifetime membership." remember how Annie and Jeffrey made a big deal about saying Doyle, the godfather of poker, he's got a lifetime card to play in the Epic Poker League forever. Well,
I'm telling you, how can you not like Doyle? That's awesome. Oh, man.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris here at Harris St. Louis in the World Series of Poker Room. We'll tell you about some of the promotions going on for the month of March here in just a couple of minutes. If you don't mind, I played a tournament a couple of days ago, and I'd like to ask your opinion on the hand. I'm not going to give away the ending before we actually get into it. I will tell you that it was in a tournament in which I was doing terrifically and had built myself up. We had about 50 players left and 27 got paid. And I got involved in a hand where I 3-bet with kings and a guy to my left 4-bet. And I looked over at him and I had made it like 9,000 and he made it 40,000. And I looked over at him and I was 100% sure he had aces. 100% sure. But I couldn't stop myself from making the call. I know I should have laid it down. I had over 100,000 in chips at the point. He had like 67,000. So I make the call, and I lost two-thirds of my chips, and I end up bubbling the event. So that it turned into an ugly day that was going along great. But along the way to building up that 100K in chips, here's the hand, and you tell me your thoughts on it, okay?
Okay.
The blinds are 500 and 1,000 with a $100 ante. I've got about 33K at this point. I'm in middle position. I look down at pocket threes. I open for 2,100, 2.1x raise.
Right.
Comes around to the big blind, who's a young, good, aggressive player. He flats. He's got about 50K, so he's got me covered. He flats the 2,100, so there's now, with the blinds and antes, 5,700 in the pot. The flop comes jack 9-3. I have flopped bottom set. A nice hidden bottom set. He checks. I bet 3,400. About two-thirds of the pot, 60% of the pot. He raises me to 10,100. The action's back on me. Now, you're me. I'm just based on what I know. You don't know any of the real history of this, but I can tell you this guy had shown himself to be a good player, a fairly aggressive player, but it's jack 9-3 rainbow. I've got bottom set, and after I put in the 3,400, I've got about another 29 or 30K behind that. If you're me, what do you do? You've got position on the guy. What's your move?
Well, you don't have any kind of flush draw out there from what you're saying. It's possible he could have a queen 10 and have an open-ended straight, which, you know, is the only hand right now there that you should be worried about. I'm telling you, if he's in the big blind with pocket nines or pocket jacks, either one, you would have expected a raise pre-flop. Out of position with nines, I'm going to raise there 90% of the time to see where I'm at. Jacks, I suppose there's a chance he could have fired with jacks and trying to make it a huge pot or something like that. puts you on ace, king, ace, queen. If the flop comes out, not much. But then he turns around then. If he would have top set, you'd bet 3,400 into the pot. There's a chance you have that over pair. If he would flat again, if he raises. Okay, I am 100% convinced you have the best hand right there. If I'm wrong, then I'm going to probably be going broke because there is no way in the world I can put him on either pocket jacks or pocket nines. Therefore, I'm 100% sure you've got the best hand there. He's young. He's aggressive. I'm going to give him a chance to commit his whole pot, and I'm going to pop it again, but I'm not going to shove with it.
So, all right,
what did you end up doing?
Well, first of all, while you were talking there, a guy walked by our table and tripped over the wire and took me off the air for a moment. But we're back. here's what my thinking was in this hand.
Okay.
What do I want to see come on the turn? If I just call his raise, if I just call the 10-1 here, what do I want to see on the flop? Is it possible that he slow played aces, kings, queens? It's possible. So if an ace, a king, or a queen comes off, I'm in trouble. If he does have the jacks or nines, well, then it's set over set, and I'm out of the tournament, and that's poker. You know, I always feel that way about a set over set situation. It happens so rarely, and the odds are so high against it, and I don't think that this guy plays it that way. If he does have jacks or nines, fine. But if he has a jack nine, and either a jack or a nine comes off, which he could have, again, I'm going to be out of the tournament, or at least I'm going to have to lay down my hand. So I don't want to see an ace, a king, a queen, a jack, a nine. 10 is probably an okay card because I don't put him on something like queen eight where he's going for the gut shot. He's too good a player to be playing the gut shot there. So 10 is a safe card for me. I don't want to see an eight because he could have queen 10, as you said. Eight gives him a straight. I don't want to see a seven because he could have 10-8, and seven gives him a straight. So now I want to see 6, okay, 5, 4, 3, 2. I don't think he's calling me with a pair of 6s, a pair of 5s, a pair of 4s. Highly unlikely he's doing that. If that's a heck of a float with a raise in this situation, there's no way he's doing that. So I feel safe with 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 10. In other words, more than half of the deck is a bad card for me. And if he is on a draw, I want him to worry about what's going to happen. I want him to have the pressure on him. So I moved all in. And I went into statue mode.
Yep.
He thinks for 5 minutes. Now, I should have told you, this is the last hand before a break. It's the last hand before a 10-minute break. He thinks for half of that break. 5 minutes. I sit there like a statue, not moving, looking at my one point on the felt the way I always do for 5 straight minutes. And he's got dark sunglasses on, and he's looking at me and trying to figure out what's going on. And he finally folds. 2 hours later, when we get to another break and we are broken up into other tables, he comes over to me and says, "Were queens good there?" Now, I don't know that he has queens, but he's asking me like he did. And I said,
"Yeah."
I'll tell you after the tournament. I think it's possible that he did slow play queens.
Yeah.
Sees a jack 9-3 flop comes out, figures he's got an overpair. He's going to put the pressure on me. But he made that good laydown. He also said to me, if my queens weren't good there, you almost got a double up. I was very close to making that call, which is why he tanked for 5 minutes. But in that situation, I just felt like I couldn't let another card come off because there are so few cards in the deck that I'm going to be happy about.
Now, again, we disagree a little bit there. I worry more about the straight draw than about anything else there. I could really see him doing that with an ace-jack. I could see him doing that with a jack-nine. I could see him doing it with a lot of different cards there that you easily beat, that he's almost drawn dead with. So I'm going to try and get him to commit the rest of his chips, and I literally will try and put a bet out there that will almost force him to shove or fold without me shoving. You know, I want the chips out there is what I want.
So you're maybe min-raising?
Absolutely. Yeah. Somewhere around that again. I'm mid-raising it. I'm telling him to either get in or get out, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And at that stage, he has to know that the turn card, whatever it is, I'm pretty much pot committed and I'm going to be shoving. Therefore, if he makes that call on the turn, he's got so many chips committed that, you know, he better have a hell of a turn card coming.
Yeah.
So I think he probably would have folded in either case. I think he probably had like ace-jack or king-jack. But, you know, we'll never know, of course, on that hand. And I don't think he was going to call you, and I don't think he would have called a mid-raise either. So I think you probably got the maximum out there no matter what. But I would have done anything I thought would work to get more chips in the pot.
Yeah.
Because I almost absolutely guarantee at this time you had the best hand, and he was drawn to a 10 or 20%er at most.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I think you're right. If he did have queens, by the way, I think.
That's exactly right.
Because if he three bets me, I'm never going to see that Jack 9-3. I'm never going to make my set. I'm going to be gone. So, all right. Yeah. While we're talking about tournament action, let me tell you that here at Harrah's St. Louis in the World Series of Poker Room this month, they are doing a series of $60 sit-and-goes every day. As soon as they get 10 people on the list who are willing to put up $60, you sit down at a table, and you're playing for a seat in the $350 tournament that's coming up here on March 18th. Not only can you do it through the sit-and-goes or just pay the $350 yourself to get in, but also every time you come in and play in a cash game here, you swipe your card at the kiosk inside the Harrah's Poker Room, and you're already in the drawing for 8 seats in that $350 tournament that'll be drawn on March 18th. Even if you win your way in 2 different ways, winning a sit-and-go and through the swipe, the seats are transferable so you can give them to a friend. So $60 sit-and-goes, they're going every day here at Harrah's St. Louis. Also, when you swipe your card, you're doubling your comps through the entire month of March. So good reason to come in here and play at Harrah's St. Louis. And don't forget about the World Series of Poker Circuit event coming here starting on April 12th. The full schedule is on WSOP.com, or you can link to it by going to harrahsstlewis.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from Harrah's in St. Louis and from Las Vegas. We'll take a break, and we'll be joined by TV producer Maury Eskandani, the guy behind ESPN's coverage of the WSOP and the return of Poker After Dark to television. When we come back in a moment on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS at KFNS.com and our podcast via iTunes and Stitcher Radio and TheChipLeader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis and from Las Vegas. I am Paul Harris, along with professional poker player Dennis Phillips, and we're joined now by a man who has produced so many hours of televised poker over the last decade, Maury Eskandani, man behind ESPN's coverage of the WSOP last year, and for all those years of high-stakes poker and Poker After Dark and the NBC Heads Up, and much more. Maury, welcome back to the Final Table.
Gentlemen, it's nice to be with you again.
Always. He doesn't know us very well. He's calling us gentlemen already. Oh my.
Well, you're at the Final Table, aren't you? Everybody at the Final Table is a gentleman to me.
Oh, that's very nice. We appreciate that. Lots to talk to you about, and I guess the reason we're having you back on here is because one of your great TV shows, Poker After Dark, returned to TV last night, albeit in reruns, on the NBC Sports Network. I DVR'd it last night and watched a little bit of it today, and I thought to myself, how is Maury going to digitally remove all of the Full Tilt Poker logos from this? And I noticed that you didn't when it came to Huck Seed and John Juanda and Phil Ivey. Their patches were still on there. Did you and NBC have to have a discussion about that in this post-Black Friday environment?
Well, you know, it's always, I don't find it proper to have, you know, make any comments between Poker Productions and the networks and all that. They make a lot of decisions, and we basically try to provide what they're asking for, and if it is helping poker to move forward. We're all for it. So as far as digitally removing logos, the show has no longer has a sponsor. When you're on a felt or on a stage or any other show, you're a sponsor. But the players make their own deals, and they're not really part of their playability is part of the show, but the deals they make is personal deals. So and it's just that would be between the players and their sponsors. So as you know, the shows were shot a couple of years ago, so all those logos will live even 10 years from now. They'll still be there. So,
but you obviously had to take out not only the Full Tilt commercials, but also their logo on the felt?
The logo on the felt, yeah. Everything that's every signage of the show is the Full Tilt is gone from the show. Yes.
How hard is that, Maury?
You know, I don't do it myself, actually. I know it's very difficult, but the technology exists, and it's just very time-consuming.
I bet.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to get some pre-recorded ones that have never aired before, and it's going to be on here for six nights a week. There's been a void of poker on TV as far as I'm concerned. Can we expect to see some new shows for either Poker After Dark, High Stakes? Please tell me NBC Heads Up is going to be coming back.
Yeah, well, NBC Heads Up has a very good chance of being back in 2013. And for Poker After Dark, we actually had a promo made with Mike Matisau saying, we are back, but he didn't get the accent quite correctly, so we're not using it. You know, the bottom line is Poker After Dark always had a lot of reruns on NBC.
Yep.
So, you know, we sprinkled new shows all throughout the year, if you recall. And this is not going to be any different. I'm pretty confident that they're working the schedule where the sprinkled new shows will surface. And just like everybody else, I'm hoping they surface faster than later. But again, that's all network decisions. They obviously look at, you know, when and how best to bring these shows to surface.
So you don't even know when the unaired episodes are going to air?
I have not been told yet. I have not been given a schedule. All I know, they have the shows, and their programming will decide how to do it. And like I said, I wouldn't be a bit surprised that if some of the new shows don't show up in the next couple of weeks even. It wouldn't surprise me because the way they... You know, they have their own, it depends what schedule they're up against, what is leading to this, what other programs exist anywhere else. So I'm sure they're looking right now to find the best slot to bring the new shows in.
As soon as that
happens, obviously, we'll let everybody know.
Good.
Oh, excellent. I'm sure you've been following all the goings-ons for the last few months as far as poker legislation and trying to do it state level and federal level and everything like that. And are you just trying to position yourself so that when it becomes legal, you can be ready to go full board with these shows? Or
I think
do you think you can get them on the air ahead of time?
Everybody's been trying to position themselves against poker becoming online poker coming back in U.S. by the U.S. companies. Everybody's, you know, it's just from big or small, everybody's trying to get a foothold and be in the right place when this happens. Fortunately, we've had some shows, and they are, you know, name brands. And when legislation happens, which I have no doubt in my mind is going to get worked out, I just don't see how it's not. Either in state level, which will turn into federal level, it will come. And like you said, we've been trying to restructure our company, think through different things, you know, small or big, you know, depending who would want to use Poker Productions to promote their brand. We're ready, and we do really have quite a few ideas that can be turnkey pretty fast if somebody tries to get a brand out there.
But you don't even need online poker to come back for that. You need somebody to step up and underwrite them. You need Apple to decide poker players use iPads. You need Pepsi to decide, hey, people drink soda. You need 5-hour energy to say, hey, we got poker players who are 22 who were doing 16-hour sessions, and they need us to be, I mean, that's really what you need, right? It's the sponsors more than the legislation that will make these shows come back.
You know, Paul, above all that, what I need and what we need, everybody in this industry needs, is to make sure the mainstream out there understands that poker is a game that you can play or you can gamble on. I had, you know, a couple of months that I could spare some time playing golf, playing poker, playing chess, playing crazy rummy, and it's amazing. Every game that I played, I can gamble in it, and I become what, you know, I don't like the term, but we call a sucker. It's easy to be the sucker, to be the person that gambles in every game, or you can play the game. What mainstream out there don't understand, they immediately put poker and gambling at the same category. And that's, once they understand that, once they understand that it really is a game that can be played in such a professional level, and I'm not saying it's something that everybody should try to learn. That's okay. You can be an engineer. You can go ahead. As a matter of fact, if I had my way with my kids, neither one of them are really interested in poker. None of my nephews are interested in poker. But if I had my way, advice to them, I said, listen, don't quit school. Finish it up. Get your degree. Go to work. But learn this game and play it on the side, because you can play for the rest of your life, and it will keep your mind sharp. If you don't believe me, my buddy Henry Ornstein, he is going to be 88 soon, and he is sharper than when I first met him 15 years ago or 20 years ago. Why? Because he plays poker every day. Every day he plays poker. His mind is so sharp. I'm not kidding you guys. If there's one living example, it's Henry. He remembers things from way past. So, and he's gotten pretty good at it. It's not like, you know, he's definitely not a sucker. He's been bugging me to play with him. I'm running away from him, so.
Challenge him to golf. There you go.
Sorry?
I should.
I should ask him. Henry, if you're listening, come on over. Just bring your 9-iron. Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, the thing that I still love about poker is it relates so much to everyday life. I mean, if you're a salesman and you're trying to read a customer, it's no different than if you're at a table trying to read your opponent. I mean, there's so many things. They're talking now about how poker players make great analysts on Wall Street. They're talking about, I don't know. We don't want to get off on that subject, so I apologize for that. But there's so many things good about this game. I just really, really hope that the general public will start to accept it as what it is. It's such a game that can be so enjoyed.
And
so
true. And we need the ad agencies to accept that.
So true. But I mean, once the image is correctly relayed to them, once they understand what this is, it's just like any other sports, and in some cases, it's just fascinating. I mean, look, we all love the game. Why do we love the game? You can be a degenerate in the game. I mean, I'm not saying love it as a degenerate, that you just come in there and play every hand and just gamble your money away. Well, of course that's wrong. I mean, the poker players happen to love those guys. That's different. I'm talking about love of the game. The game itself is an incredible game. That's what, you know, we have to make sure people understand out there.
Maury, let's talk a little bit about the World Series of Poker. Last year, you took over the contract to do ESPN's coverage of the WSOP, and it included the first ever near-live coverage of the November 9, which Dennis and I talked about at length because we both absolutely loved it. It was great programming online and on ESPN2, and to have the finale live on ESPN for all of those hours was terrific. Take us behind the scenes, if you would, as the guy who's the executive producer of this, and tell us how much effort has to go into doing that sort of thing, and are you doing it again this year?
Well, first and foremost, I have to give the credit to the networks. They are, you know, we're in the business of producing poker, and they're in the business of knowing what works on TV. We've always been lucky enough to have great executives from the networks that we work with to give us helping hands, to give us advice, to give us directions that plays a nice role of satisfying the viewership that in case of poker is pretty mixed. You know, you can have, you can say your football fan is, you know, if you put him at the knowledge of 1 to 10, you would say everybody falls above 5. But when you bring poker on TV and then you take out your viewership and analyze them and distribute, you know, look at them, all of a sudden you see that there's people from anywhere from 1 to 10. So how do you make everybody happy? It's a pretty neat balancing act. Mm-hmm. That is when we rely to the network to tell us that, hey, this is going to work, this is not going to work. The idea of live came from ESPN. They challenged us, and, you know, I mean, us poker players like the challenge, right?
Yeah.
And we rose to it. We said, okay, we'll bring every knowledge, every bit of knowledge that we have from the game and television, and we'll try to provide what you are asking. And I believe we probably provided 90% of what they asked for. And their guess was right. It was well received within the poker community. But believe it or not, even though everyone that plays poker or in that scale of 1 to 10 falls over 5 or 6 was fascinated with the game because it really dragged you in. Now you were playing the game. You were not just watching. I'm sure there were some friendly bets between you guys saying that does he have it or doesn't he have it? Does he, you know, I mean, so that's all of a sudden you're in the game, and for us poker players, or like I'd say above the 5 or 6 kind of players, it was fascinating. But what happens if the majority of the viewers fall under, say, 4? They're more like a recreational, let's just have fun, watch poker, and don't really want to dig into it and try to, like, learn the strategy. That's fine. I mean, they still have to enjoy the game. What happens if they're the majority? Networks knows this better than the poker community. So they come back into us and say, hey, listen, live was great. It was fun. But maybe we need to do this and add that to it. So we are waiting to get instructions from them. And whatever they dictate, obviously, we'll make it happen.
This is a conversation that Dennis and I had, which was, what do recreational players think of this? Because they don't sit there as intently as we do for 4, 5, 6 hours. They might have been happy with the 2-hour recap, which was 8 all-in hands or more, you know, 8 elimination hands and a bunch of other all-ins and queens versus ace-king kind of races and those sort of things. Do you have a sense in your mind, Maury, before you hear back from the network, what the feeling is about it coming back this year? Obviously, you'd like to do it again this year, but what's your sense of what the audience feedback was?
Well, yeah, we have some sense, and they're still going back and forth trying to put the finishing touches on it. But one thing that I can assure you, there will be live programming, and there will be, as you know, before, traditional edited programming on Tuesday nights. So they both will exist. And what I can't speak for the network is how much of it will be live, how much of it will be edited. So that will be decided, and then they will let us know. Of course, they will let the whole world know. But there will be live, because we've been ordered to gear for live again. So you will watch some live programming. Yes.
Great.
Well, last year was such a change with the online streaming and the live and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that you know for sure it's going to be tweaked this year, or anything added, or any hint you can give us to what's going to be coming in June and July?
Every year, we try to tweak things for the better. We really spent so much time and effort last year, and I mean, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I think the team got most of it right. I mean, most of the stuff, the fact that I'm hearing from so many people, they were glued to television, that means we got it right. So will there be changes? We'll make some changes to make the show easier to follow, give you more information, understandings. I'm supposed to be meeting, I have a meeting in an hour and a half with the World Series of Poker folks, which is another big discussions of adding more gears and things to the tournament. I'm just considering myself a pretty lucky guy to working with two companies that are so passionate about this. Obviously, we know World Series of Poker guys are very passionate to drive the tournament for the better every year. And then, of course, ESPN.
that have all the knowledge of sports and what works on TV and puts it on the table. I feel like I'm cheating, but, you know, that's okay, too. I'll just take all their knowledge and take the credit. It's kind of fun. Don't tell anybody.
No, we won't.
Yeah.
We'll keep that to ourselves.
Right.
What about the million-dollar free roll? Harrah's has announced, the WSOP has announced, that they're doing something a little bit different there in that they're offering 100 pros who have done so well in the last 2 years of both the WSOP and the WSOP Europe the opportunity to pay a $10,000 entry fee to join up with those who qualify from the various circuit events around the country. So you could have a field of nearly 200, and that's going to go on the weekend. That happens right before the main event gets going at the beginning of July. Are you going to be covering that, and do you know what that coverage is going to be?
Yes, we are. And to my knowledge, that is going to be an edited programming. That's going to be on ESPN. But I don't want to speak for World Series, but I really do believe the idea is very, very good idea. I mean, after all, if you're going to call it national championship, and let the qualifiers be tested against seasoned pros. So if they win this, they truly have become national champion. You know, they are winning a bracelet that says national championship. They're being challenged harder, and of course there's more money. If they're putting up $1 million free roll and then another 100 players or you know, bracelet winners put their own money in there, now the prize pool is $2 million. So there's more money for everybody and more credibility for the title. That's the way I see it. But, I mean, obviously, I wish you guys asked the World Series of Poker people. I mean, they would have a lot more insight for this.
Well, and I don't know who thought up this, whether it's Jack Effel or Seth Lansky or Ty Stewart or yourself, but to put this immediately prior to the main event, when all of those 100 pros are probably going to be in Vegas anyhow and going to be available, and you're going to probably get a higher percentage of them. I think their timing in the schedule was just spot on to really make this a popular one. I have a question for you concerning the one drop. Are you going to be covering that and those 45 players?
I don't have a final count on it, but my understanding is it is going to be a bracelet event. That means there will be more than 24 players, and they're expecting 40 players. We are going to cover that, and that's going to be a fascinating one. You know, I mean, $1 million buy-in, whoever ever thought of that? we didn't think it was going to happen in our lifetime, happening.
We're all old enough to think $10,000 for a poker tournament? Who can afford that? And now we're seeing $100,000 and $250,000 and now the first ever $1 million buy-in event.
Right. And again, you know, like, that's so cool. I mean, obviously, Guy D'Aliberte gets a lot of credit for being the driving force behind it to make it happen. But there's so many people, successful people out there that play poker for enjoyment. It is probably one of the points that we should make that, look, they're not poker players, but they really enjoy the game, and they try to get good at it. They can compete with some of the pros and highlight the different aspects of the game. I mean, the way it challenges them. I mean, I'm sure every billionaire that plays poker, it's not the money doesn't mean anything. The challenge is just so great that it captures them. And all of them are, you look at their characteristics, they all like a good challenge, you know whether it's in poker or business and life, whatever.
I think having bios on these guys and you know, how they built it and how they came across this fortune could be extremely interesting there. I think you could do an awful lot with those.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have some features on them. Yeah, for sure. They'll have some features
on
them.
Awesome.
Yeah, I have a feeling you may have to send a couple of film crews to Macau to do some background on some of these people who are buying in, because I'm guessing we're going to get a few Macau businessmen, the guys who play in the super high rollers over there.
Right. I certainly hope so. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. But who's paying for it? Is Final Table sending me to Macau? I'll be more than happy. I'll be there tomorrow. You guys can stake me in that game that I keep hearing about it too, by the way.
You're going to get
the mail.
Yeah, you're going to get the same check you got for appearing on the show today, Maury. I'm sorry to tell you. But we really appreciate it. It's always a great pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on the great work. We're really crossing our fingers for getting more of your great programming back on TV. We want to see more poker. I do have one last question for you. Do the ratings on the NBC Sports Network, which not many people know about, it used to be known as Versus and carries the NHL, but do the ratings for your reruns of both the NBC Heads Up and for Poker After Dark, will that play any role in NBC's decision to possibly put the show back on the air?
Again, you know, I don't want to make a comment on what really plays a role, but for NBC, they have their own reasons for doing things, but I find it hard to believe that rating doesn't play a role in any TV show. Naturally, you know, I don't know what the average rating is for that time slot. We are coming in and we are hoping that we do better than what was there before, and that's always a good thing.
Well, maybe we'll get a re-entry in the $1 million one drop one, and that'll be good for your ratings.
Well, yeah, that would be sweet.
Yeah. Maury, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
Same here. Thank you so much, guys. Take care.
Maury Eskandani from Poker Productions here on the Final Table. One last thing before we run, Dennis, and we've only got about 30 seconds here. That $10,000 that the pros are going to be able to pay in to for that, quote, free roll, the national championship the WSOP
yep.
is doing, I read that that is rake-free. Are they doing this because Epic isn't going to be able to do their $1 million rake free roll event?
No, actually, this was decided long ago. I actually, over in Europe, talked to some of the guys from the WSOP, and at that time, they already were going to be allowing the pros in there. They just think it's good. It's kind of pros against the Joes. It's a way to make it a national championship. It's a way to reward the people that have done so well in WSOP for the last couple of years. I like what they have there. And I think it's a great chance to get the top players from the last year in the circuit and the top pros from the last 2 years in the WSOP and all sitting down at the felt and dealing the cards. I think it's awesome.
All right. That's it for this week. Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, Paul Harris at the World Series of Poker Room here at Harris St. Louis. We may not be in the Bluff Power 20, but we're on your radio every Tuesday afternoon at 3 or on demand anytime via iTunes or Stitcher Radio and thechipleader.com.